Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is music producer, songwriter, and performer John Simon, one of the top record producers of the 60s and 70s. John was responsible for pulling together the band's Music from Big Pink, also worked on Bookends by Simon and Garfunkel, and so many more, including Red Rubber Ball, which was a huge hit. John will be at the Egg in Albany on July 6th to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Music from Big Pink. But today, he is here to answer your questions. So if you have some burning questions about rock and roll and folk and all that stuff from the 60s and 70s, now's the time to call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. John Simon and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is music producer, songwriter, and performer John Simon, one of the top record producers of the 60s and 70s. John was responsible for pulling together the band's Music from Big Pink. Also, he worked on Simon and Garfunkel, Bookends, and a long list of artists, including Janis Joplin. Well, John will be at the Egg in Albany on July 6th to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Music from Big Pink. But today he's here to answer your questions. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. You know the drill. Sometimes I don't get to all of the emails, just like we don't get to all of the calls. If you want to get in, and be sure to get in, call right now, 800-348-2551. Still a few open lines. After they get loaded, not the guests, the lines. You got a 50-50 shot of getting in. John Simon, welcome back. It's been a while.
Hi, Ray. It's always fun to be here. Thanks.
I think you were on the round table several years ago now?
I don't know exactly when it was. I was here to talk about Shadowland Theater down in Ellenville,
my favorite
Ulster County attraction.
And you drew the short straw, and I was hosting that day, so I vaguely remember the conversation. It's amazing. Well, a big event coming up at the Egg on July 6th. Professor Louie will be there performing. Are you performing with the band for this?
I'm performing apart from the band in this. I'll do a few of my own songs probably because I can't resist performing. But mostly I'll be talking about the band and the fact that it's the 50th anniversary of the Big Pink era. And I'll be taking questions from the audience, which I love to do because I love to answer silly questions with silly answers.
Well, you get plenty of those here today, and not from the callers, but from me. You know, I was reading about Big Pink album, and did it really take only 2 weeks to make that record?
Oh, less than that. No. Well, you ready for a long story, right?
Ready, man.
Okay. We were very much prepared for the album. The guys had been recording in the basement of this house that they called Big Pink, the so-called basement tapes. And then I showed up on the scene, and Levon Helm showed up the day before. And knowing that we had an album in the works, or about to do an album, we spent an awful lot of time preparing for that session. We worked on arrangements. We got everything so that everybody was playing great with no mistakes. And then we could go into the studio and just get the ultimate performances if we were all keyed up for it. So we went back into the studio that I was very familiar with, Columbia Records, old Studio A, and we did, and I believe this is true, 5 songs in one day that made up most of the Big Pink album. It may have been 4, but I think it was 5. And then that was our demo, and Albert Grossman, the manager of the band, and Dylan and all these people, took this demo out to California and played it for Capitol Records, and they signed us. And then we went out to California, which is the reason I say that it didn't happen in 2 weeks or whatever it is. Mm. We went out to California, and we took one look at the Capitol studio out there and did one test session there, and then we just goofed off for a month because here we were in sunny L.A.
Yeah.
The alternative was Woodstock in January.
That's a good plan.
And so we just goofed off for a month until the Capitol Records said, "Aren't you guys here to make a record?" And we went back in the studio and finished the album up.
So you took the what were the original demos and you brought them to L.A. and then overdubbed on top of those?
Oh, no, no. There was no overdubbing. These are the songs, the other songs we cut in L.A.
Oh, I see.
Right.
So really, everything vocals included, done live in the studio?
Pretty much. I mean, Garth and I overdubbed the horns and some percussion and things like that, but most of the vocals were live. Everything was as live as could possibly be.
This day and age, that you don't hear about stuff like that.
It doesn't
anymore.
Happen anymore. People ask me what the differences are between recording back then and recording now, and there are a couple of them. One of them is that, and you can look at the Beatles as a good example. The Beatles were together recording in, or actually working in clubs, and had all their repertoire together. When they went into the studio for their first album, Meet the Beatles, they performed their repertoire in front of a microphone, but it was like a documentary, exactly what they did and on the road. By the time you get to Sgt. Pepper, for instance, things had changed. Multi-track recording came in. Overdubbing was the deal. And you get these layers and layers of things. And that's what we've got today. And the other way that music has changed, and this is really significant, is that music used to be a blind idiom. But when MTV came along, all of a sudden you're seeing the acts. And the appearance of the song became as important as the instruments to play the song, for instance, the arrangement. And that was reflected in live shows. All of a sudden, you just couldn't have somebody up there singing. You had to have dancers. So there's lots of work for dancers and big screens and everything. It became an extravaganza.
Somehow, I don't think the band would have handled that all that well.
Dancers, no.
No, it wouldn't have been a great extravaganza. You made a board game here, and I got to tell you, it's killing me. The board game is How to Make a Record. And it's like the game of life or one of those things where, you know, you have remix, budget really depleted, go ahead one space. I got to say, this is a brilliant piece of work. Will this be in your forthcoming book?
It will. What forthcoming book are you talking about?
Well, thank you for asking, John Simon, our guest today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. The book, which comes out in September, is Truth, Lies, and Hearsay, a memoir of musical life in and out of rock and roll.
That's it.
It's been a long time coming.
The title? It took a long time to get out of your mouth.
It's a hell of a long title, yeah. But no, I mean, you must have a lot of stories in there.
I do have a lot of stories in there, and I try not to hurt anybody's feelings or say anything wrong about anybody. You know, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
What's the fun in that?
I know. Well, what can you do?
Can you change some of the names?
Well,
I'm sure there are a couple of people that I can think of that you'd probably have a couple of stories that wouldn't be so pleasant about.
I tried to be fair. I myself was not without fault in any of these situations, so...
All right, John Simon, let's take a call here, and then we'll take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. And let's go to Tom in Pittsfield. Tom, you're on.
Hi, how you doing? I'm actually up in Cheshire now.
Okay.
I'm driving around.
All right.
You there?
Sure. Hello?
Yes, Tom. Yes, you got me?
Yes. Hello?
Okay, hi. My question had to do with a second band album. I remember reading about it that Garth Hudson, of course, was really accomplished at the sax, but that the other members couldn't really play the horns, but that you induced them to do that somehow. And I was just always really curious about how that was possible to make somebody who wasn't a horn player learn how to play the horns just for a few songs. So
well,
if you could talk about that, it would be great.
Sure. The name of my book is Truth, Lies, and Hearsay.
What Which you category just, does that fall in?
Well, it's certainly not the first.
Okay.
It's either a lie or a hearsay. Oh, Garth can play a horn, and Garth and I were the only ones who played horns on those records. The other guys,
okay. See,
there was a point when the band got successful, and every musical instrument manufacturer in the country wanted to give instruments to the band in order to get their endorsement, which made sense for guitars and basses and drums, but we also got all these horns. And so, like, Richard Manuel picked up a baritone sax and tooted away on a little bit. Rick picked up a trombone and tooted away. Somebody took some pictures of it, and then the rest is hearsay. Fake news.
I see. Well, thank you for clearing that up.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. John Simon is here. He has a book coming out in September. He has a gig with Professor Louie at the Egg in Albany on July 6th. And our number here is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarriers and fabricators, used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wine, and cocktails. Live music every Friday, chestercommontable.com. Windhorse Naturopathic Clinic, Brattleboro, Vermont. Offering naturopathic medicine, oxidative medicine, colon hydrotherapy, and acupuncture. Specializing in Lyme disease. Now accepting new primary care patients. WindhorseNaturopathic.com. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996, imediaconsult.com. And 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing local and seasonably inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine, 20railroad.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. The number's 800-348-2551. John Simon is our guest. I always wanted to ask about the drums on that particular album.
What particular album?
The one we just heard, The Weight, right? Did we hear the Weight?
Yes, you did, right.
Oh. Under the Underwriting. So, you know, as much was said, Ringo put towels on his drums because Levon did that. Is that true?
You know, it's so funny. Let me get this straight here. Yeah, my son told me that he saw that Ringo was trying to emulate Levon's drum sound.
Yeah.
Which is funny because Levon was trying to emulate Ringo's drum sound.
That's so funny.
And, you know, the way we got the tom-tom to moan was we tightened two the nuts that were across from each other on the head and loosened the other four. So that gave it, you know, sort of a boom, kind of a timpani sound.
And when you recorded this record, and as you said, it was live, would you throw mics on each amp and then some vocal mics, or were you just going two-track?
We were ultimately going two-track, but we had several mics that were mixing into the two-track. I'm not an engineer. I'm an arranger, so we just tried to keep it as simple as possible. I mean, personally, I'm just thrilled to hear music from 100 years ago. I can say 100 years now. I'm that old. Where the recording was so unsophisticated, but the soul of music still comes through. So I'm not a kind of person who's obsessed with sound. Mm. And I really can't tell you how
we mic
things.
Pretty good.
They sound pretty good, yeah, but it's mostly the players, you know. And
I suppose, but it blows my mind that this was basically done live. I had no idea. I mean, it's such a great, and it really is an organic performance. Our guest today is John Simon. The book that comes out in September is A Musical Life in and Out of Rock and Roll, and then the subtitle, if you're scoring at home. Oh, that's the subtitle. The title is Truth, Lies, and Hearsay. And then the subtitle is A Memoir of Musical Life in and Out of Rock and Roll. The gig coming up on July 6th with Professor Louis celebrates the 50th anniversary of music from Big Pink, and you'll be doing a few of your own songs.
I'll do some of my own songs, and mostly I'll answer your questions and tell some stories.
Oh, that's nice. You know. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Roger, our buddy in Warwick. Roger, you're on.
Hey, John and Ray, how are you?
Okay, Roger, how are you doing?
Good, good. Hey, just a quick question that gets back to your two tracks comment you made a couple moments ago, and that is, you know, you've been in the business quite a while, and I'd like to know your thoughts between recording on analog tape and recording on digital media today, and, you know, the versatility, the sound quality, and I'll hang up and let you guys go at it.
Do you want to do full disclosure, Roger, in what you do?
I do vacuum tube audio amplifiers.
Yes, you do, sir. Okay, so let's have John answer that question. Thanks, Roger.
I guess I'm with you, Roger. I came up in that era of analog stuff. And when digital came in, people would say, oh, you hear the difference. And I'd say, well, no, I don't know. You could convince me I hear the difference. But, you know, I'm not an engineer head. I don't know a volt from an ohm. I hear notes. So, I mean, when a bird sings, I automatically know what notes the bird's singing. My daughter brought her fiancé to a restaurant to be introduced to my wife and myself, and there was a piano player in the restaurant, and I got so hung up in what the piano player was playing that I, you know, didn't know whether his name was Jim or Joe. It was Jeff, actually.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Prior to working with the band. You worked with Simon and Garfunkel a little bit on the Bookends album. What'd you do on that record?
Well, they were slow in putting things together. They could afford to be slow. They'd had some big hits. And this is an interesting story, I guess. We could go on. The first thing I did was they wanted to overdub on a song they were doing. I think it was Save the Life of My Child. And so we got together, and they told me, they sort of sung some of their musical ideas for me, and I wrote them down. And they said they wanted it to be like violins, only lower and softer. So I said to myself, okay, muted violas. So we scheduled, and they also wanted to have some brass instruments for some punctuation and some percussion instruments. So usually, in the old days, with professional musicians before Simon and Garfunkel, you would record four songs in 3 hours. That's because all the musicians could read music and they knew what they were doing and it would be done.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, for this little overdub, I'll allot an hour for these violas, an hour for the brass, and an hour for the percussion. So we get there, in the session, and the violas play it through one time, and then they're checking their answering services after the first take to make sure that they're in the right place because there are no violins or cellos, it's just violas. Then while they're tuning up, a voice comes from the control room, Paul or Artie, I don't know which one, saying, what was that? And I said, what was what? He said, what they're playing. What was that? And I said, that's just them tuning up. They said, oh, forget the arrangement. We like that.
Oh, no.
So we spent hours and hours trying to get that again, that random tuning thing. This is, you know, pretty much nonsense. And then, but it's true. And then after they went over their hour into the next couple hours, meanwhile, the brass players and the percussion players are in the lobby, you know, soaking up overtime, just doing nothing. So that's...
And you wrote so you actually wrote arrangements on the spot for this?
No, in that case, there was no arrangement.
No, but what I'm saying is you prepared something for the musicians to play.
Days before.
Oh, days before.
Yeah.
And they just had the budget that they could go ahead and do that.
They had the budget because they had a sharp manager. The deal often is, and may still be, that a record company pays the recording costs of musicians. Other musicians, and it gets taken out of the artist's first royalty. So in essence, the artist is paying for it, but because the record company is withholding their royalty until they make that money back that they laid out for these extra musicians. But Paul and Artie's manager went to the record company and said, look, these guys are just a folk duo. They have no backing musicians. So, you know, don't make them reimburse for the cost because there won't be any costs. The record company said, fine. Then they had their hit of Sounds of Silence, which had drums and guitars and all stuff on it. And all of a sudden, they became an act that wasn't just two guys and one guitar, but an act that had an infinite number of musicians, and they didn't have to pay for a penny of it.
Well, that's a pretty good deal. John Simon is our guest. He will be at the Egg celebrating the 50th anniversary of the release of Music from Big Pink with Professor Louie and the Chromatics. And he has a book coming out. And I'll get the title right. I like to give the subtitle first, but it's Truth, Lies, and Hearsay, a memoir of a musical life in and out of rock and roll. You hear the final product of, say, Simon and Garfunkel Bookends, and you say, God, that was magic. But were there plenty of times where the magic was just not happening?
Well, it was very, very slow. As I say, they had this big hit, and they also had recorded Mrs. Robinson before I got involved because it was part of the soundtrack to The Graduate. So the record company was very, very anxious to get things going. And Paul and Artie were not anxious. They were just luxuriating and experimenting things.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. John Simon, I'm going to run a couple names by you here. First of all, let's go back to The Circle and Red Rubber Ball. That's something that came from you, your mind, right?
Well, the song came from them, and I just did the arrangement and played the organ on it and like that.
But basically, the arrangement is the thing on that particular recording. And was that a prefab sort of group? Just the record company said, we have this group here? And
no, some guy came into my office and said he had a record, this song, Red Rubber Ball, written in part by Paul Simon. And he said he was Brian Epstein's American associate. Now, Brian Epstein was the Beatles manager, so I took notice. And everyone else in the building had turned this prospect down. And I was the low man on the totem pole. I screwed up my courage and went to my boss and said, can I have $2,000 to make this record? And he said, son, take five. And so I went in and recorded it, and I had an idea for an organ lick on it that begins it and occurs during the song. And these three guys had no organ in the band. I just put it on the record, so they were forced to get an organ player when they went out on the road.
And how long did they last after that particular recording?
We did another album with them, and then they sort of fizzled out.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Producer, songwriter, performer John Simon is our guest. Janis Joplin.
Is she here?
No, actually, she was indisposed. But tell us about working with Janis Joplin.
Okay. Janis Joplin. Okay, now my line on Janis is that she coated her outside with patchouli and her inside with Southern Comfort.
Yeah.
So she was a handful to work with, and there was always a tumult around Janis. She was, you know, things were never quiet and placid around her. And she tried real hard to be as good as she could. And, you know, I felt really sorry for her because, you know, she was a gifted person. And when she lived in San Francisco, she would meet her pals in Gold Gate Park and say hi. And they'd say, hi, Janis. But after she was on the cover of International Magazine, she couldn't leave her hotel room without being mobbed by crazy fans.
Yep.
And that led to her reliance on substances and eventually her demise. So, you know, it's a tough road being incredibly successful. It's really tough.
One name I saw on the list, and by the way, our number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question for John Simon. On the list of many of the people you worked with, one name that jumped out, and I'd love to hear the backstory of this, it's Gil Evans.
Okay, Gil Evans was always my idol as an arranger. As I was growing up, I loved arrangers and noticed them, but Gil was separate from the rest. You can hear his work with Miles Davis, mm-hmm. Sketches of Spain, and these other albums. And when we moved into New York City, we put our kids into a school. We had to because there was a public school strike, and they said, well, you can trade services for tuition. My wife could teach mime and acting to kids. And they said to me, you could be on the music committee. There's one other person on the music committee. His name is Gil Evans. So that was a wonderful thing, and Gil and I became really friendly with his family, and I managed to get him a deal to do some recording too, and I produced some albums with him, and he was a wonderful, wonderful, smart as a whip guy. He said to me that if he had known that arrangers never get any royalties, he never would have been an arranger, which would have been quite a loss.
Our guest today is John Simon, and our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Lightfoot.
I saw Gordy a couple years ago.
Really?
Yep, he's still doing great. I think he's saying this current tour may be his last because he's an octogenarian this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was wonderful. I did a bunch of string arrangements for his album, and you know, he was just a great guy. Gordy used to say that inspiration for his songs, he would take a plane to a city he didn't know, check into his hotel room, go out on the street and look at people's faces and get inspirations for songs by imagining what their lives were like.
Well, that's pretty good. Would you say was the genius that you worked with? The one that stood out?
Oh, come on.
Besides yourself, obviously.
No, not me at all, but there are just so many of them in their particular ways. I mean, Garth Hudson, who's here in I'm not in Ulster County now, am I?
No.
He's down in Ulster County where I live.
Yeah.
Garth is just brilliant, and, you know, he's someone said he's on Planet Garth, you know, I mean, he's a little bit disconnected from life around him, as he should be, because he needs to spend his time thinking about all musical things he thinks about. And let's see, others, you know, genius is a word I seldom use. I wouldn't even use it with Garth. Genius implies somebody that's possessed with something.
Well, don't you think
ability.
The great ones really sort of are sort of separate?
They have a touch of inspiration and special talent. You know, Leonard Cohen was a great poet. Robbie Robertson's a great songwriter. People I work with, you know, Gil was a great arranger. There are a lot of them. They were just really superlative at what they did.
What about Dylan?
Dylan, yeah, Dylan is fabulous, you know, and some people just are sort of, you know, life comes in waves, and some people are on the crest of that wave, and they hit it. You know, Dylan was one of those folk singers, and he happened to, he's a very good folk songwriter, and he was in a tradition of story songs in the folk tradition, and it's a combination of talent and the breaks, you know, and Dylan got some breaks, too.
Let's talk about Dylan for a minute. He was involved, but somehow not involved in the Big Pink record. They did the Basement Tapes, or what became the Basement Tapes. And did he not offer to sing a couple of tunes on the record?
Not that I know of, no.
No?
No. I mean, if he did, I'm sure Robbie, who was the de facto leader at the time, would have wanted to keep the focus on the band as a new group. Mm. But he did offer to do the cover, which he did, and I always think of it as something that Marc Chagall might have done if he was awakened too early after a nap.
Our guest is John Simon. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones. Tim in Ballston Spa. Tim, you're on.
Yes, I have one of John's, I think, oldest albums. I'm not sure. It's just called, I think, John Simon. Had songs on it like Motorcycle Man, and I can't remember all the others.
That would be me. That's me.
Hmm?
That would be me. That's my album, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And do you still ever do any of those of that music?
Sure.
Can we get Motorcycle Man on July 6th?
Yeah, maybe I could do Motorcycle Man on July 6th. Are you coming to the concert? I'll do it for you.
Well, I'm just now hearing about it.
Ah, well, it's July 6th at the Egg.
To do so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember your wife was on the cover, and lovely lady.
Yeah, she's no longer my wife.
Okay.
Well, I have a much better wife now.
2.0. Good for you.
That happened to be a song that I had on the stereo when my daughter came home for the very first time from the hospital.
Oh.
And I had it playing loudly, and it's been a favorite ever since. I can't lay my hand on it right now. But is it still available?
Sure. Everything's available.
That's right.
Well, that's true.
Tim, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Our number is 800-348-2551. John Simon is our guest. He's just rolling, going with the flow here. Let's go to Bill in Great Barrington. Bill, you're on.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. John, I was just tuning into the radio and heard you talking about Janis. And I wanted to ask you a question about another one of her contemporary bands that I believe Janis had a relationship with one of the members. Did you ever do any work with the band Blue Cheer?
No.
Very loud. Very loud group. Well, thanks, Bill. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's see what's next. Let's go over to Adam in Poughkeepsie. Adam, you're on.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. Similar question to the last guy that was on. Did you have a chance ever to work with through Janis with Pigpen or the Dead?
Same answer. No.
No go. Huh? Did he ever show up with a half a bag on? And
I don't know.
No? All right.
Thank you.
Oh, all right. Thanks for doing that, I guess.
Well, thanks, Adam. We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. John Simon is here, and he will be at the Egg July 6th. We'll be looking out for the book, which comes out in September, and it's all about heresy. Truth, Lies, and... Hearsay. Truth, Lies, and Hearsay, a memoir of a musical life in and out of rock and roll. Let's go over to Jim in Guilderland. Jim, you're on.
Hey, guys. I had that 45 Red Rubber Ball by Circle, and... at the time, I thought they were a band from Latham, New York. Is there any truth to that?
I don't know where they were from. When I heard them, they were all graduates of, I think, Lafayette University or Lehigh University, one of the two.
Pennsylvania,
right.
Well, I mean, there is a Latham Circle, so that you might be onto something there.
Oh, yeah, it's a traffic circle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that must be it.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for that call. Let's take a break here, 800-348-2551. John Simon is our guest. They'll be celebrating music from Big Pink with Professor Louie at the Egg on July 6th. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Wild Center, Tupper Lake, New York, presenting Pete M. Wire's iForest, an immersive sound installation in a wild forest, wildcenter.org for details. Coldiman Hartman Architects, serving clients throughout New England and New York with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples, elementshottubspa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving the Berkshires, Pioneer Valley, and all of Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. And Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. CapitalRoots.org for more.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Always fun to find the inside story of some of those great records from the 60s and 70s. John Simon is our guest, music producer, a songwriter, and performer in his own right. He'll be at the Egg in Albany on July 6th to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the release of music from Big Pink. And he is here today to answer your question. This one came in from Ian Pickus, who is a huge band fan and Dylan fan. And Ian writes, Simon came back to work on The Last Waltz. What was his experience at that show? Have you seen the film?
He's asking me if I've seen the film?
Yeah, I've seen it.
I've seen it, too.
Yeah.
That was a wonderful experience, a wonderful experience. I felt like the ringmaster at a superstar circus because there were all these superstars there. The way it worked was, well, if anybody doesn't know, the guys in the band wanted to do a concert where they would be the backup band for their favorite artists. And every one of the artists they asked agreed to show up. And we met with two a day, one in the afternoon and one in the evening, I suppose, at the band's own recording studio in California before we went up to San Francisco for the concert. And since the only guy in the band who could read music was Garth Hudson, it was up to me to translate the songs so that the guys who couldn't read music would know what to play, you know, what are the chords happening, like that. And then we went up to San Francisco and did the show. And, I mean, there's just so many stories, Ian, that I don't know where to begin. And I just don't know where to begin.
What's your favorite guest artist in that performance? I'll tell you mine, the Staple Singers.
Yeah, well, here's where we can begin. The Staple Singers weren't there.
Really? Well, they were in the studio.
Yeah. See, what happened was Robbie, who pretty much organized the thing, realized that there was a dearth of people of color and women because all he had in that category were Muddy Waters and Joni Mitchell. So he decided to ask the Staple Singers to sing, and that's a wonderful performance.
Oh, my gosh.
And Emmylou Harris, too. And they sang on a sound stage with lots of smoke from dry ice.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that might be a clue at that point that movie, The Last Waltz, is not a real documentary. I tell people it's not a picture about a concert. It's a picture about a concert, a movie about a concert. And in fact, a lot of the music, as wonderful as it is, was repaired after the fact. For instance, the horns were not balanced well in the recording truck by the engineer who was in charge of that. And so we had to go back to New York City and redo all the horn parts. Levon's parts were all kept because Levon refused to do any fixing. And it didn't matter because the drums were great and his vocals were great. Some of the singing was out of tune. We had to redo that. Rick was playing a fretless bass, and so some of the notes were not quite in tune. Garth and Robbie were always fastidious about getting their parts just right, so they exercised the opportunity to change their parts and fix their parts. So, you know, it's a wonderfully entertaining film and record album, but it's not 100% live, which is one of the reasons my book is called Truth, Lies, and Hearsay. Not all lies are bad lies. Some of them work out to be great.
Well, that one, I think, was overt. It was pretty obvious that that was not part of the show when the Staples Singers were.
Yeah. But there are other things. The other fact that that all the bass parts are redone, all the piano parts are redone, all the, you know.
Wasn't it by then standard operating procedure to retrack a lot of live records? I mean, I heard Frampton Comes Alive is, you know, mostly not alive.
Well, I guess I'm just naive, Ray. I'm really a naive guy in the first place, yeah.
Is it true? Yeah, it's true. Okay. Yeah, a lot of people are nodding that it's true.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I'm skeptical. Let's go to Frank and Troy. Frank, you're on.
I was just curious. John said he played horns and organ. I was wondering what his musical education was.
Glad to answer that, Frank. I started playing piano when I was 4 years old, and I went through all that stuff the kids learn when they're 4 years old, Hannon exercises and Scarlatti and Haydn and Mozart, Beethoven, and got a little further than that. And then I got a piano teacher who could teach me how to play bebop and boogie-woogie and stride piano, and I always had bands in high school. And then I went to college and I became a music major. And when I was in high school, I also stayed out of trouble by playing the baritone horn in the junior high and high school. It's always good to have, if you have a teenage kid, get them into sports or music or art or something to take, you know, get that craziness out of their mind. So I was pretty much preoccupied with music in those years. And I'm continually learning about music, you know. I've never stopped being a student of music.
Frank, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. What are you learning now?
What am I learning now? Well, that's a very good question. It's a constant. One of the things I really want to do, my father was an amateur musician, and he went to Juilliard. He got these books that were all the symphonies, not all the symphonies, but many symphonies of Mozart and Beethoven and Tchaikovsky, all written in score form with little arrows that would point in the score to the important parts as they came up. I've always wanted to I still have the books. I wanted to take them out and listen to these symphonies and follow along in the scores and learn more about orchestration that way. I've just recently taken those books out of the closet where they have sat for many, 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 many years.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be a fun project if you have time. The thing you mentioned about, I think it was the band, you said Garth was the only one who read music.
Mm-hmm.
In your experience recording with all these people, and many more than I've even mentioned, most of the rockers that come in or the folkies, they don't read?
No.
Really?
No, you'd have to give them the chords as letters and numbers, like E7 or, you know, that kind of thing.
And does that frustrate someone? You know, you always see pictures of George Martin working with the Beatles on some of these complex recordings, and I wonder, God, how much volume did he have to take to get through the day?
It's a different ball game. You know, it's just... There's some beauty in only knowing the chord names. I mean, I'm not a guitar player, so I don't know one hand formation from an E7 from another one, you know. And guitar players who do that all the time, even if they can't read music, know that difference.
Yeah.
So it's just playing in a different ballpark.
John Simon is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Donna in Glenmont. Donna, you're on.
Hi, this is a great show. I've only heard the last 20 minutes.
Well, then you don't know for sure.
Yeah, that's right. 20 minutes, you know, you're reaching a peak, I know.
You missed the best part.
Go ahead.
I'm calling just because I have a detail to answer from the local person who called and said was the Circle based in Latham, New York, which is local to us here in Albany. And I happen to know that Tommy Dawes of the Circle.
Right.
His younger sister, Robin, was my college roommate at SUNY Albany in the early 60s. When the Red Rubber Ball came out in 64 or something, 65, and in our dorm, we called up the local Albany radio station and voted, and Red Rubber Ball got to be the favorite song for the week or something, because we were flooding the news. The radio station. Also, Tommy did go to Lafayette College, and he grew up, he and Robin and their wonderful mother grew up on Bacon Lane in Loudonville, actually, which is right near Siena and Latham.
Well, great. Thanks, Don. I, you know, as soon as you said Tom Dawes, I just lit up.
Yeah.
Because I do recall now that he was from someplace in upstate New York. I didn't know where. And when Ray asked what happened to the band after that, I should have said that they went on to very successful careers in advertising. Tom Dawes wrote 7-Up the Uncola.
You're kidding me.
No.
Oh, I bet he made more on that than he...
he did, yeah.
Wow. Did. Well, that's great. Donna, thank you so much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by John Simon. This one came in via email, and it's from Ken. Does Mr. Simon have any experience at Muscle Shoals Studio?
Yes.
Can you describe it if you did?
Yes, yes, yes. When I did my own first album, Robbie Robertson said to me, you should get Dwayne Allman to play on your record.
Oh, yeah.
So I got Dwayne Allman up in New York City, and we were playing a little bit. And it didn't, what we were working on didn't work out. But he said, go to Muscle Shoals. So I went to Muscle Shoals, and it was very different from any, it was not in Kansas anymore. You know, it was very different from any place else I'd ever been. Total culture shock. And my former wife, who the earlier caller referred to as being on the having her picture on the cover of that album, needed a drink bad. So we went to go down to the hotel desk, and it's a dry, you know, dry world down there. I don't know if it's the town, the county, the state, or what.
Yeah.
And so he said, go to this restaurant here and sit in some particular booth. So we do, and we go to this restaurant. And this sheriff comes in, big sheriff, the huge belt buckle and everything.
Your name's Simon?
I said, was I going to be arrested for asking for, you know, liquor down
right
here? And I said, yeah. And he sits down across from us in the booth and pulls a curtain across the booth. He says, what do you want? I got bourbon, I got gin, I got vodka.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, yeah. Thank you for that email. Let's go to Nancy in East Longmeadow. Nancy, you're on.
Hello?
Nancy? Oh, Nancy, you waited on hold. Are you there? All right.
Can you hear me?
Oh, we got you now. Go ahead.
I'm here. I'm curious, when you're in the recording studio and you make a hit, is it obvious when you're making it, or are you surprised when it hits the record player?
I tell you,
the radio.
Yeah, I tell you, I've got to be surprised. I only know if I like it, and my tastes are not the same as popular tastes in any way, or shape, or form. But when going back to the call we had earlier about Tom Dawes from Latham and this the girls at the school making it the number one song when they heard it on the radio, the biggest thrill of my professional life, and I can just say this is the biggest thrill of my professional life, was hearing that song, Red Rubber Ball, come out of my car radio in New York City and knowing here I was playing on the playing field of grown-ups and I had made something that was had made the cut. There I was on the radio.
All right, Nancy?
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. John Simon is our guest. That's an interesting point about not really knowing if something will hit. As a songwriter, do you know when it's hit your sweet spot, and do you think then it'll translate to other folks?
I know when it's hit my sweet spot, but I have no idea if it'll translate to other folks. I know what I like, and I know it's, you know, certain friends who like the same music that I like.
Yeah.
I like, but, you know, popular taste is something else.
And I mean, it's changed so much.
Sure, and constantly changes.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. All right, tell us about this gig coming up at the Egg July 6th. And so you'll start the show?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. It's a commemoration of the Music from Big Pink recording. And I'm there to talk about that and to answer questions about it and to play some samples from the Basement Tapes and the Big Pink album to show how the song evolved from one to the other. And I'll also do a couple of my own numbers. I just had a request on the air to do one of them.
Yeah, Motorcycle Man.
Right.
Huge hit.
Yep. And, and like that. And I'll just answer questions and talk. I mean, I've been doing a lot of talks lately, what I call like library talks. I go around to libraries and do just that. I answer questions and play songs. And so I'm pretty used to that.
Professor Louie and the Chromatics will be there. Aaron Hurwitz, Professor Louie, great musician, and that's a great band. Do you think that you'll be off to the side as they play the Big Pink music and kind of critique it and say, well, that's not quite actually how it was?
No, I don't think I'd critique it, no.
What, to yourself, only in your internal dialogue?
Well, yeah, I am a critical person, it's true. But I'm critical of myself, too, so doesn't. Right.
That's a very diplomatic answer and doesn't make for a really terrific radio.
I'm sorry, but I try to be diplomatic and give good radio at the same time. It's tough, Ray. You know this.
Well, at least you're not swearing. I mean, that's a plus so far. Let's go back to the phones. Mark in Glenmont. Mark, you're on with John Simon.
Yes, hello. I grew up in Cohoes, and it's a, I don't know if there's a little-known fact or just a rumor, but Bob Tuzian grew up down the street from me, and he supposedly was the drummer on Little Bit of Soul by the Music Explosion.
Yeah.
Do you know if that's true or not?
I thought Den Dinkwad was the drummer on
Now you're making things up. Do I have to hit the dump button now, John? I think, Mark, I think what John is trying to say is he doesn't know.
Okay, so, understood. It's just a question.
Thank you for asking, though, Mark. I'm sorry, I don't know that.
He used to sit on the porch and play Bob Dylan all the time.
Oh, how was he, a good Bob Dylan impersonator?
Yeah, he was. And at the same time, I would ask one other thing, is I appreciate your baritone horn because I played it in the marching band.
Wasn't it cool? Wasn't it cool? Hey, the first time you stepped off in an actual march, Mark, you know, we would see if you had the same experience. You'd be playing in the band room in high school, and everything's great. And you're standing there in your costume, your uniform, ready to march the first time, and you're standing there in the place practicing once. And then the band director says, okay, here we go, step off. And you start to march, and all of a sudden that mouthpiece is running up and down in your lip from your nose to your chin, and you can hardly hold it in one place, right?
Absolutely.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Our number is 800-348-2551. We go over to Donna in Woodstock. Donna.
Hi.
Hi.
I would love to, if you would have a sort of a show and have people listening to those symphonies with the manuscripts of your father on the screen. And, you know, that seems really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, his father didn't write the manuscripts.
No. No. I would just love to see those and watch and listen to it with you.
That's cool. I think
maybe other people would too.
I wouldn't bring anything to it. It's the guy who put the arrows on the page. And you can buy these scores still at music stores.
Oh, you can. Oh,
sure.
Okay.
Follow along. That's a good idea.
All right. Well, wonderful show.
Thanks,
Donna. Hope to be there.
Well, I appreciate it. Are you still working, writing any of your own material now, or have you lost your muse?
Oh, God, no, I don't lose my muse. Hey, here's a beautiful thing. My wife and I have written this musical.
Oh, yeah?
And we're hoping to get it produced next year down at the Shadowland Theater.
Cool.
And it's about it's called The Great American, the Amazing Sunshine Traveling Medicine Show. That's what it's called. And it takes place in 1921. It's a medicine show trying to make it to vaudeville so they can give up selling this elixir because they're being chased by the government because prohibition has come in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And how far along are you with that?
Finished.
Really?
We're having an actual stage reading at the end of August down in Ellenville at the Shadowland Theater and hope to have a production next year.
Who wrote the book?
She and I did.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And so the score is done as well?
The score is done as well.
That's exciting.
It's great. And we love writing together and working together. We wrote a play several years ago that was premiered and done in New York City, too. And it's just great. My wife's a member of the Actors Studio, and really she has a great ear for dialogue, so she writes a lot of the dialogue.
Do you argue about it?
A little, yeah, sure. I can't say we'd be a lie, not to say we did, but we generally get along fine.
Good. Well, that's good. And how much a week do you now work? You look like a pretty relaxed fella.
I work all the time.
Really?
I get up in the morning and I work.
So,
but I mean, it's not only working on music. I grow tomatoes. We just caught a raccoon.
Well, that's not work.
We caught a raccoon in our trap in the garden. I got to go take him home and get rid of him someplace. Though I hear that it's illegal.
It is to
get rid of it. You can trap a creature, but you cannot get rid of it.
Depending on the county and state, that is correct, sir.
What do? Make a pet of it?
Yeah, exactly. You train the raccoon. What could go wrong?
You could eat it if you were so inclined.
That's a different program. That's Food Friday. And that'll be on in a couple of days. Well, John Simon, this was a great deal of fun. Once again, how do people find out more about the gig coming up?
I guess you call the Egg.
The Egg, or I guess it's theegg.org. Oh, I didn't write it down, and my producer didn't write it down. The book, which we will find out much more about in September, Truth, Lies, and Hearsay, a memoir of a musical life in and out of rock and roll. So you come back, maybe do the book show with Joe Donahue or the Roundtable or
something? Will you be there, Ray? Come on.
I may have had a couple of pops, but I'll probably be floating around here at some point.
Good.
Hey, man, and best to Professor Louie and the gang, and thanks for being here. Support comes from College Street Motors Amherst, specializing in, no, let's start again. I've read the wrong one. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repairs, including tire pressure, exhaust, brakes, and checking engine lights. Full-service gas station, collegestreetmotors.com. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery, labels to lawn signs, in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. Vermont Coffee Company, organic coffee in the brown paper bag, now roasted with renewable energy. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And the Tang Teaching Museum at Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks again to John Simon. Thank you for calling and for the great questions. And thanks to Zach, our engineer. Wonderful job, Zach. It's 2 days in a row he's been awake. Colleen O'Connell answered the calls today. Tomorrow, it's pets and vets. Stand by now for news.